They tuck it away and run for it inside the five, and he's in for the Lions touchdown.
Barry Sanders turned around a defensive back about three times. Wow.
The guy is trying to tackle him, but he's got his back to Barry because he can't find him.
Here's a touchdown, Lions. Holy mackerel, what a run by Barry Sanders.
Detroit. There'll be a 15-yard penalty on the kickoff, but the play is not reviewable.
What up, Doe? This is the Roar of the Lions UK podcast, the podcast where one pride goes worldwide. And this is the college football podcast, Van der Deur. My name is Anthony Fitzpatrick, and I'm joined this evening by an unusual panel for the college football podcast. Ryan is away in New York at the minute, got to see a Lions victory at the weekend, but he is not back yet. So with me feeling absolutely atrocious today, been nursing bad illness for the last few days, I've bought in some reinforcements to help me with this college stuff this evening. So we have Matthew Turner, regular host of the Roar of the Lions UK podcast, and we have Roar of the Lions UK writer Ashley Soden. How are we this evening, gentlemen? Hopefully you're doing a damn sight better than I am.
Day two into a new job. It is a learning experience, first time in 8 years. And alongside trying to wrap my head around what the hell college football is, it's been a hell of a week. How about you, Ash?
Same. I was scrambling to finish off the preview for tomorrow's game, which went up about an hour ago. It's not my best work, but at least you've got something funny to laugh at and to point back at when I say, when we look at the end of it and I've predicted a loss and then we turn out, we blow them out or something, you can make me look like a right fool. That and just seeing all the lovely, lovely posts that all my lovely Knowles accounts are doing, taking the mick out of the Gators with Black Friday's matchup, where hopefully we're going to become Kings of the State once again for the first time since 2016.
Yeah, that's right. All anyone who's listening this evening, Ash is a massive Florida State fan. So if you want to put your pro Anthony Richardson or Florida Gator comments in YouTube or Twitch, I will read them out, and I will read them out several times. So please do put them in there. Right, like you say, this is the College Football Podcast. What are we going to go through today? We've got a little bit of news to go through in the college football scene. I am going to stand in for Ryan in terms of his FCS updates. The playoffs have been decided. I have nowhere near the knowledge he does, so I'm just going to read out the playoff bracket, and then he will get back to you next week because the first round of them take place this coming Saturday. Then we're going to have a review of week 12 of the season, the top four combined college football playoff ranking teams won by a joint margin of just 26 points this weekend. There were nearly some massive upsets there. There were upsets all around in the SEC. There is a hell of a lot of games to go through, so we're going to do that. And then we're going to take a look towards rivalry week. It is the last week of the college football season, the regular season. Once this is done, apart from the Army-Navy traditional game that will come out in December, we are down to championship games and bowl games, and of course, the college football playoffs, how this season has flown. Right, before getting to this, just quickly go through the housekeeping as per when I can find my doc. So, Roar Lions UK Discord, if you want in on that, please let us know. Great group of people in there at the minute. We've had a few more join us today, actually. How many have we got in the Discord at the minute, Matt?
We've got 76 people.
76. So if you want to help us carry on growing towards 100, just let us know. We will stick in a link for you in YouTube, Twitch, wherever you may be. The main Roar of the Lions UK podcast is coming up later this evening. We are going to be discussing the Buffalo Bills game tomorrow on Thanksgiving. And can the Lions shock the world for four in a row? Who knows? But come and listen to that show, and also take a look at Ash's preview for that. You'll get all the latest and greatest info and stats on this game. Don't forget to like and sub to everything, YouTube, Twitch. We're up to about 546 on YouTube at the moment.
So 646.
Yeah, 646, sorry. Yeah, we are up to 646. So if during the course of this evening we're doing two shows, I'm doing it while I'm ill as anything. So, you know, show a bit of sympathy there. Let's try and get to 650 this evening. It will be much appreciated. And then obviously you can follow us on Twitch, Twitter, all those usual bits. We're trying to grow bigger than a lot of the other British UK podcasts for other teams because their teams all suck and ours are the best. And then don't forget Lions Nation Unite, Herman Moore's pet project. Content by Lions fans for Lions fans. You will find many great people out there. You have Detroit Lions on the prowl. You have those Dion on there. You have Micro Mike on there as well, guys, who are incredible at what they do. Right, let's dive down into the news. So there is a little bit to go through. So one of the most deserved extensions of a head coach this season has been announced this week, and it is thoroughly deserved. The Kansas Jayhawks have extended head coach Lance Leipold through to the 2029 season. It is just his second season with Kansas. He has broken all kinds of unwanted streaks for the Jayhawks, who had kind of become a bit of a laughing stock, especially in the Big 12. They are 6-5 on the season going into their rivalry matchup with Kansas State this week. This is going to be their first trip to a bowl game since 2008. So well done to them. Nearly 15 years since they've been to a bowl game, bless them. But the team has made a huge commitment to him this year. So the school has announced the stadium overhaul project and other facility improvements that are expected to cost more than $300 million. And this is actually Leipold's second extension this season. He was extended in September through to 2027, but there has been serious interest from Big Ten teams, Wisconsin and Nebraska, who have been sniffing around, and Kansas have decided, screw it, we're going to lock him up even longer. So he's through to 2029 with a deal which is structured to be more favorable to Leipold the longer he stays. So it ties him in to the franchise a little bit longer. So hopefully good things coming for Kansas. New stadium, new equipment, and their head coach. They've got two good quarterbacks there at this moment in time. So happy days for the Kansas Jayhawks. Michigan State, on the other hand, seven players charged in relation to the tunnel fighting in their rivalry game with Michigan. Me and Ryan mentioned this a few weeks ago, but the charges have finally come out. Just remains to say the charges are just accusations. At this moment in time, they have not been officially charged with anything. But Kyrie Crump, Itavian Brown, Angelo Rossi, Justin White, Brandon Wright, Zion Young, and star edge rusher Jacoby Windman have all been charged with various forms of assault. Rounds off a rotten week for Michigan State, who lost 39-31 to Indiana this weekend. Largest points tally put up by the Hoosiers this season. And their quarterback threw for an incredible 2-for-7 for 31 yards. And they dropped 40 on them, so go figure. And the last bit of news, college football playoff race is down to 6. Barring some massive upsets this coming weekend, and a lot of upset people if Alabama sneak their way in, Georgia, Ohio State, Michigan, and TCU to continue to hold on to the four top spots, with LSU and USC occupying spots 5 and 6, waiting to pounce if someone should slip up. And with Michigan and OSU facing off in the big game this weekend, could well be winning you in if you're LSU or USC. I'll bring you in here, gents. Who's making the college football playoffs, in your opinion?
I want to say it'll be the Georgia, Michigan, because I think they're going to beat Ohio State, probably a hot take. And then TCU actually sneak in. I'm predicting that my Noles are the reason that LSU do not make it into the college football playoff. So if you remember, but all the way back in week one, they missed the last second field goal to lose against us. That might come back to bite them, and they might miss out on the college playoffs because they managed to lose to us.
But the more you win, the better defeat you come. What, you ranked 16th now? You beat 16th, Florida this weekend, probably in near the top 10. You become a big win. You come and become a quality loss for them. So could be there. True, what do you reckon, Matt?
Well, I mean, so that's what's happened to Notre Dame this year, right? Started so badly, thought they were going to be an absolutely terrible team, and then they've made a big comeback, and suddenly their defeats actually look like they were good defeats.
Ohio State's win is now a quality win over Notre Dame, which is
I know it's
a load of boulder dash.
I think I'm really on the fence with Michigan and Ohio State. I think that whoever loses that game is out. I don't, because you missed the championship, I think that's just done for you. So that's a winner take all. I think TCU make it and Georgia make it. And then, I mean, who is the next team up?
You've got LSU in fifth. They're 9-2, mm-hmm. and then you've got USC, who are 10-1.
Yeah, so I think so USC get it. I really think USC get it. The way that their quarterback's playing at the moment and the big win against UCLA, and UCLA, I think, are better than their ranking. I love Dorian Thompson-Robinson, whatever. Yeah, he's a absolutely electric guy. And that game was just crazy. I know it was one of the pick watch games, so we'll get onto it later. But that was a fantastic win for me. And you know what? I know that you take the entirety of the season into account, but I think winning the big games late might just sneak it for them.
You would think so, but LSU beat UAB this weekend. That is far from a quality win, and yet still USC ranked below. You don't believe in SEC bias? Well, you do now, because there should have been a swap there, in my opinion. I'm the same. Providing they don't slip up, Georgia get in, TCU get in, winner of the Big Ten game gets in. And then afterwards, I'm not sure. I think the LSU bias will sneak in and they'll give it up. But it would be most undeserved. They shouldn't do that. There are a lot of teams from previous years who deserve apologies if they get in there, because some teams who played similar have been denied playoff applications over the years. So.
Can you imagine if either one of OSU or U of M lose to Iowa in the Big Ten Championship? Then what happens? Like, it shouldn't happen, but it could. It really could.
Don't. The fact that Iowa are going to be playing in a championship game this year, potentially playing in a championship game this year, it's an offence to all, you know, not good sense in this world. Yeah, I don't trust that. We're going to go on to it in a minute, but the Big Ten is the only conference currently in college football that doesn't have one team currently in the championship game. That's because in the East, you've got two powerhouses, and in the West, you've got a ton of crap, which are all just as bad as one another. So I don't know, but if Iowa make a championship game, they need to burn that conference to the ground and they need to combine them together. So yeah, that is the college football playoff picture. Six teams left potentially, unless some of these other teams lose. Maybe Bama work their way back into the picture, but it would be one of the biggest injustices going in some time. Right, that is really the news for today. Not really much else I want to put in. We are going to move on quickly to the FCS playoff update. So as Ryan was making you aware last week, a lot of the teams have been decided for the playoffs. The last week of the regular season took place the weekend just gone, and now the entire playoff bracket is decided. So just to let you know the layout of the FCS championship or the playoffs, you get a first round, which takes place this week in November the 26th, the second round, December the 3rd, quarterfinals, December the 9th and 10th, the semifinals, December the 16th and 17th, and finals on January the 8th. So the first round, as I say, takes place this weekend. So the brackets, as they have been announced. So we've got St. Francis at Delaware. St. Francis finished 9-2 on the season, Delaware 7-4. They're fighting it out for a shot to play against number one ranked South Dakota State, who went 10-1 through the season. Then you've got 9-2 Fordham traveling to 8-3 New Hampshire. They're going to fight out for the right to travel to number 8 seed Holy Cross, who went 11-0 during the season. Then you've got Gardner-Webb, 6-5, and Eastern Kentucky, 7-4. Winner of that faces number 5 seed William & Mary, who were 10-1 on the year. Then you've got North Dakota, 7-4, and Weber State, 9-2. They're fighting it out for the right to play number 4 seed Montana State, who went 10-1 through the season. Then you've got Southeast Missouri State, who were 9-2, and Montana, who were 7-4. They're fighting it out to play on the behemoths of FCS football in recent years, North Dakota State, who by their season had a pretty rough standard. They went 9-2. Then you've got Idaho and Southeastern Louisiana, Idaho 7-4, Southeastern Louisiana 8-3. They're fighting it out for the right to take on number 6 ranked Samford, who 10-1 on the year. You got Elon 8-3 and Furman 9-2 fighting it out to play number 7 seed Incarnate Ward, who went 10-1 throughout the season. And then rounding it out, Davidson and Richmond, who both finished off 8-3, fighting it out to go and take on number 2 ranked Sacramento State, who went 11-0 during the season. So that is your FCS playoff brackets for season. As I say, this goes on all the way till January the 8th, when the top dog in the second rung of college football will be decided. When Ryan is back next week, he will give you a breakdown on likely winners, dark horses, etc., as the first round has been done. And then in the FBS, we went through the championship games last week. Two of them had been fully decided. So since then, we've got two more championship games. The MAC championship, which is played at Ford Field, will be contested between Toledo and Ohio, and the Mountain Championship will be decided between Boise State and Fresno State, who will fight it out to be claimed Kings of the Mountain. CUSA, Big 12, Sun Belt, American, and Big 10 are still to be decided as to who's playing in their championship games. And as I mentioned a minute ago, Big 10 is the only conference without anyone reaching the championship game so far. So that is playoff updates for the FCS and FBS, or championship updates for the FBS. Right, let's get on to some reviews so I can bring you guys in a little bit more here. Let's talk some of the games. And there are a lot of games between the Pit Watch, between upsets, between all sorts of stuff that went on this weekend. So I've done this one specially for Ash because, you know, you've got to give him some slack sometimes. But as I say, if you are the team who gets your name in the title of the show, you get to be talked about first. This week's podcast title, Vander Der, 2 weeks in a row, the Vanderbilt Commodores have made it into the title of this show. And that is because the Vanderbilt Commodores knocked off the Florida Gators and Anthony Richardson to record two successive SEC wins back-to-back for the first time since 2018, and it is their first home win over the Gators since 1988. To put it into perspective, I was born in 1989, so I was not alive the last time the Vanderbilt Commodores beat Florida. But most importantly, the craziness of this season, Vanderbilt are 5-6, so they remain in contention for a bowl game this season. They enter next week's finale against Tennessee, who we're going to talk about very shortly. But I'll just put this over one to you, Ash. How delighted were you that the Vanderbilt Commodores knocked off Florida?
Amazingly happy. Partly just because it nearly knocks off the Anthony Richardson first round hype. Despite he played pretty well. Played pretty well, like something like 350 yards, four touchdowns. Did pretty well. He just couldn't get that team over the hump, despite being superior in talent. Just couldn't grind out the win. And hopefully this week, it's going to be a nail on the head. He's going to get the really coolest treatment where he's got all the tools, but he just doesn't have those intangibles. Hopefully, for his sake, I hope he comes back. He gets the right advice, comes back, tries again next year, and can put a better, just get that team over the hump. Because at this point right now, his range of outcomes is too wild. He can go top five if a team in the top five likes the tools. He could fall all the way down into day three if people look at him and think, hang on, like he's certainly got the tools, but can he do it on the big stage? So far, he hasn't really proven that.
Yeah, absolutely. It's been a very messy season for Florida. They are 6-5 on the season. Only one game ahead of Vanderbilt, and they've not won many more games in the SEC than they have actually. I mean, this was kind of the first half of this game was dominated by Florida, but then it completely switched in Vandy's favor. And you look at the stats in this game, and you find it crazy as to how Vanderbilt won by a full score. So yards per offensive play, 7.5 for Florida, 4.8 for Vanderbilt, and they actually had less offensive plays in this game than Florida did. Explosive play rate for Vanderbilt, just 5%. Red zone success rate, just 31%. Third downs, they were pretty good, 50, but this was not an offense that is really going to kill you there very much. Florida, 486 offensive yards in the game. Vanderbilt, less than 300. 294 all told. They were more efficient. They did more with little, despite losing two turnovers. They had a fumble. They had a pick in successive drives, which brought Florida back into this one. But I mean, this is just crazy. Vanderbilt win two in a row. They knock off Florida. They're going in a game against Tennessee this weekend. I don't know, Matt. What do you think about these plucky Commodores? Can they make the upset
against Tennessee?
Yeah.
I mean, no Hendon Hooker, right? So, you know, that team has started to fall apart a little bit. Tennessee made that one massive win, got ranked number one, and since then it's all been downhill. And the thing about you can say about Vanderbilt is they've made the most of their chances. You have a look at this game and you talk about the lack of offense, but they didn't settle for field goals apart from late. They scored touchdowns. They made the most of Florida's mistakes. You know, they had a fumble return touchdown off a punt that it was completely muffed into the end zone and recovered by Vandy. So special teams play. And then the interception they had on Anthony Richardson resulted in a one-play 28-yard touchdown. Like, no offense at all and 14 points on the board. And the rest of the time, they took touchdowns where they could. It's a team that has got grit. It would be very much in the mold of a Dan Campbell college team. And you know what? That's going to play well against a team that said goodbye to its quarterback, probably to the draft. So what have they got to play? What have Tennessee got to play for anymore?
Well, exactly. I mean, pride, for one. Losing to Vanderbilt is seen as an extreme embarrassment, but I went and had a look through some of the Gator Sports Illustrated pages, all that sort of stuff. It was not pretty viewing, let's just say. Poor Billy Napier, I think he'll get it right eventually. He did really well at Louisiana, but this has not been a great first season for him. And you mentioned there, big shout out to the long snapper Wesley Schelling. He got muff punt, returned it for a touchdown in the second quarter. Big props to him, and well done to Vanderbilt. Two in a row. Can you make it three? Who the hell knows? Right, moving on. We'll go through some of the pick watch fixtures now. First one, it played in the snow. Mac Madness, Western Michigan 10, Central Michigan 12. I think I was the only one who picked Central in this one. The weather conditions may have made this unfavorable to what the desired outcome might have been, but I don't care. Central Michigan fought this one out. I actually quite enjoyed it. I do like snow games. I don't know about you two guys, but when you've got the snow in there, when it's just all going crazy, and it kind of comes to a point where it's just run the hell out the ball. There were like 12 completed passes in this game. The number of rushes was at like 60 or 70. It's just what happens. Run the ball, hope for the best, but good fun here in the MAC.
Yeah, I mean, it's just an insane game, wasn't it? Like, the amount of snow there, I mean, it wasn't the Buffalo amount of snow, but no. it was a heck of a lot and made it good fun. And you know what? Western Michigan ran for almost 100 yards more, and that's going to decide the game. But what stood out is when the passing actually works, because no one was expecting it. And actually, you know, Bauer coming up with a pick really did turn the game, because possessions were absolutely key here. But Tyler had an absolute day, and that's the difference between the teams. Gritty game. I made lots and lots of notes about this, but Sean Tyler was an absolute star all the way through, really. There was a blocked field goal as well, which probably ended up weighing in on the game a little bit, but Western put it behind them. So, yeah, all in all, it was an entertaining game for a snow game.
Yeah. You get a chance to watch that one, Ash.
A tiny bit, yeah. It reminded me quite a lot. If you remember the Bills-Patriots game from last year, where it was similar conditions, and it was like Josh Allen and Mac Jones combined for like 10 passes, it very much was like that kind of game, which is enjoyable, because we all know I do love to watch the defensive, like the O-lines go at each other. So it's quite fun for me to watch and just sit there and admire just everyone smacking into each other. And yeah, I agree, like the interception did flip it from the little condensed bit I managed to find on YouTube to watch quickly.
Yeah, definitely. Love fun in the snow. It's Mac Madness. Neither team, sadly, is going to be making a bowl game this year. I think Central scuppered Western's chances there. But so it'll just be Eastern who will be representing them in a bowl game this season outside of Michigan. So, yeah, Michigan and Eastern Michigan are going to be the only Michigan-based sides in the bowls this year, depending on what happens with Michigan in the big game this weekend. Right, let's move it on, and let's move it on to the one that everybody wants to talk about. Pac-12 action, USC, UCLA. If there's ever a performance that is worthy of a playoff spot, if you're going to take a team who's going to be able to show their credentials for this, talking UCLA and USC, this finished 45 to 48, one of many high-scoring games in the Pac-12 this year. USC on the road for this one after the first quarter down by two scores at halftime. Managed to bring it back to just a one-point deficit, 21-20, and they just managed to eke this one out in the second half. But this was a game for the offensively-minded gurus out there. So 672 yards of offense from USC, 549 yards of offense from UCLA, tallying up to over 1,200 yards of offense in the game. EPA for this, so the expected points, 29.59 for USC, 21.14 for UCLA. Those are huge numbers right there. Yards per play, 8.3 for USC, 7.3 for UCLA. I mean, these guys just sort of stacked it up here. 9% explosive play rate for USC, 11 for UCLA. Those are both over 60th percentile in there. USC struggled a bit on third downs, but to be honest, they didn't really get to third down very often because they didn't need to go that far. Success rate for both teams on their offensive plays, 59% for USC, 57% for UCLA. That is 97th and 98th percentile. So these were two teams who just went hell for leather with this one. The defenses had a rough day all around. There were some havoc rates. They're both 9% havoc rate, but that's only 40th percentile. Not great in this one. But guys, what a ding-dong battle between two of the more entertaining sides in the Pac-12 this year. UCLA have been an offensive juggernaut. USC, questions about the defense, and there still will be in this one. But when they needed to, they bought it out of the bag.
So I definitely enjoyed watching it. I actually was kind of supporting UCLA in this, partly because I quite like Zach Charbonnet in the draft, but also because I've been following Jake Bobo, who is like their star slot receiver, because he transferred this offseason, he's just gone from Duke. And I remember watching a like good few years ago, a YouTuber doing a Duke rebuild on NCAA 14. And seeing Jake Bobo, it's like, hang on, this is my kind of guy, like a sort of Julian Edelman slot receiver. So I've kind of had my eye on him, and now he's gone and sort of exploded UCLA. I quite like it. And not that I ever want us to draft him, because obviously no one is ever supplanting the sun god from our slot position. But it's quite enjoyable to watch him sort of get all the yards and that after being buried in what used to be a bad Duke team, but that's actually now sort of risen from the ashes.
I mean, really interesting game all the way through. And, you know, UCLA started out hot, but after the first quarter, it was USC all the way. And actually, UCLA brought it close late, but USC had it kind of won for a little while and let them back. USC didn't punt until 2:20 left in the fourth. That was their first punt of the game. And the difference in these two teams were two people. One is Dorian Thompson-Robinson. Yes, he scored six touchdowns, but he turned the ball over four times, three interceptions, and he got strip sacked for a touchdown, I think, in there too.
Yeah.
So that's just rough. You can't win a game that way. And when you've got a receiver like Jordan Addison for USC and Caleb Williams, who could well win the Heisman, I think he's got a terrific shot at the Heisman, then USC are going to be a powerhouse, and to stop them is going to be really difficult, no matter how good your defense is.
Yeah, you're right there. There was one difference in this game. In an offensive shootout, you need to not turn the ball over to the other team. And Dorian Thompson-Robinson, unfortunately, did. You can't throw three picks and give up a strip sack and expect to win games, especially when they're high scoring. And unfortunately, that's always been the thing that's just kind of held UCLA back a little. For as good as they are on the offense, or as flashy as they can be, they've got the running threat, got the passing threat when they need it, but unnecessary turnovers. And it's a shame. They had them at home. This was a chance to stay in the Pac-12 championship game running. They are now out of that. So, yeah, really unfortunate there. In UCLA, I mean, let's say the stats just say for themselves in this. This offensively was a hell of a good game. Jordan Addison continues his amazing season. 11 receptions, 178 yards and a touchdown. Caleb Williams threw for nearly 500 yards. He had two TDs and a pick. Austin Jones, the running back, had 120 yards. He was averaging just shy of 6 yards a carry. He had a couple of touchdowns on the day. Caleb had a rushing touchdown as well. So, yeah, just a thoroughly enjoyable game of football. And USC now have a very quality win to plead to the playoff committee now that they may be able to get into that. Right, let's move her on. And I don't know how long I want to spend talking about this one. Iowa and Minnesota said this one was probably going to be over quickly. It was over quickly. It said it was going to be ugly, and boy, hell, was it ugly. This one finished 13 points to 10 in Iowa's favor, because, of course, no one can score more than 15 points in a lot of Iowa games. Although, in fairness to Iowa, their last five games, or four games, teams have put up 13, 3, 10, and 10 against them. So the defense hasn't given up more than 14 points in the last four games. So they're playing well. But on offense, it continues to be an absolute show. For Minnesota, Mohamed Ibrahim is still a stud. 39 carries on the day. I mean, that is a workhorse load for a guy who has been through some incredibly serious injuries. But to carry it 39 times in a game, 263 yards, 6.7 yards per carry, and a touchdown on the day for him. He also had a reception in there as well. So 40 offensive plays for him in this one. But outside of that, nothing going for Minnesota. Their quarterback, whose name I cannot pronounce, Athan Kaliakmanis, 7 of 15, 87 yards and an interception. On Iowa's side, Spencer Petras went 15 of 24, 221 yards. No touchdowns, no interceptions. He scored the only touchdown of the game, Spencer Petras did, on the ground. Outside of this one, though, really very little to shout about. The defense has sort of shone through on this one. And one interesting fact about this game, it is the first game in college football since 1986 where no flags have been thrown in the game whatsoever. Boy, could we only hope for that as Lions fans. If you want to skip through this one, guys, I understand, but any comments to be made on this one?
I mean, so Mo Ibrahim's absolutely incredible, isn't he? Like, he, because of his injury history, he's not going to get into day two, I don't think. But his production, his special ability is just off the scale. Like, he's going to be an absolute steal for someone. And the first team to risk it for him, I don't think they're going to be disappointed unless he just doesn't see the field. I think he's absolutely fantastic. Having said that, in crunch time, at 10 points apiece, he fumbled it. And then in the next possession, after they forced Iowa to go through and out, then the only interception of the game happened. So Minnesota, crunch time, shot themselves in the foot, and that's why they lost the game.
Any comments,
Ash? Pretty much agree. The only player that we haven't mentioned, so I understand that to me, was, and unfortunately it's an Iowa tight end, and we have been burnt by them in the past. But hopefully this one we won't be picking in the first round. Sam LaPorta, 4 receptions for 95 yards. Had a decent game. Didn't really see as much as what we saw, what we hope in the blocking game, so he's not really a Lions tight end, thankfully. But yeah, he stood out to me a bit. Just him and his Petras' connection is quite good. If Petras ever makes a practice squad, hopefully he can go to one, whoever picks LaPorta in like the on day three, just to show out a bit, just to keep the arm warm and get a few dollars.
I don't think Spencer Petras is ever going to be more than a Gatorade carrier, but who knows? You mentioned the turnovers there, Matt. The interesting stat on this one, the turnover luck. So points that come as a result of a turnover, 11.4 for Iowa. Obviously, negative 11.4 for Minnesota. So basically, all of Iowa's points came from turnovers. That is where this game was won and lost. And yeah, so it ended very quickly, and we don't really ever want to speak about that one much again. Right, TCU. We've doubted them all season. Are they possible of going all the way to the college football playoffs, having a Cinderella story, the likes of what Cincinnati had last year? Everybody has been saying, can they do it? They've been beating teams with backup quarterbacks. They've been coming from behind a lot. The defense has not been great for a lot of the period around here, but they keep finding a way to win. They always keep finding a way to win. And This week was no exception. TCU 29, Baylor 28. TCU won this one on the last play of the game, where they had to run up on the field on an offensive snap, change formation into the field goal kicking unit, and hit it literally as soon as they set, hit it straight away through the goals for a walk-off field goal to nab this one from the Baylor Bears, who were surprisingly good in this game. Baylor have been a real hit-and-miss side this season, but every week, without fail, the Holy Trinity for TCU come to the fore and dig them out a hole. And that's going to be the reason why they go to the playoffs this year. So Max Duggan, 24 of 35, 327 yards, a touchdown and an interception. Quiet a day for Kendre Miller. He went 10 of 41, but he got a touchdown in there as well. Quentin Johnson snagged 4 for 48, but he was upended by Tay Barber this week. 5 receptions, 108 yards in there. Not much in the way of turnovers or sacks for TCU. Baylor were pretty much untouched in this one when it came to passing game. Obviously, on Baylor's side, they managed to get a pick in there. Devin Neal managed to pick off Max Duggan. But this is just anyone doubting why TCU are in that playoff run. I think, guys, this shows why they're in there.
All I've got to say is all hail the Hypnotoad. Just, I'm riding. I've ever since I found out about that sort of joke with the Hypnotoad, and even now the College Football Playoff yesterday when they announced it had the pitch in the background, it seemed to have swept the nation, and it's definitely swept me as well. I'm hoping that TCU get into the playoffs and can put up a good fight, at least give a good showing themselves if they draw. I think they'll be going up against Georgia if it's projected right now. So hopefully they can at least put a good showing up and build on it for next year in terms of like recruiting and that, because it's also their head coach's first year, isn't it, Sonny Dykes
is his first year.
So this is the perfect sort of example for him to sort of just go to recruits and say, look, we've managed to get to the playoffs with this, imagine what we could do with your talent on this team, perhaps we can go further, we can make it to the playoff final. So it's perfect for him.
I mean, sorry, just I worry about TCU. Like, okay, so you have 1, 2, 3, 4, you have 5 ranked wins. So if you beat Iowa State and you win the championship, you get in. Well done. But I don't think it's a good football team. Like, watch this game quite a lot. And I mean, they got ruined on the ground. Like, Baylor controlled the entire game and they had it nicked from them. It wasn't TCU kind of hanging in there, being plucky. Like, Max Duggan ain't it. He was poor pretty much throughout. I know he threw for 327, got a tutty, but his interception was awful. He makes bad decisions in clutch moments. And I can't believe they won this game. Like, I quite like Baylor. I think that when they've got it running, that potentially, maybe not a better team than TCU, but they're more pleasing on the eye, I'll say that. But I don't know how they got out of DOS on this one. It was just one of those where they got, I think they got a clutch INT. They got an interception in the end zone at the end of the first, and that completely turns the game. So, just one of those. Baylor left points on the table, lost by one. And then that field goal as well. TCU are in field goal range with 25 seconds left and run a play. And then when the guy's down, there's 17 seconds left on the clock on fourth down. So you can't clock it. As Ant says, they kick it with 2 seconds remaining. I mean, bloody well drilled and bloody well coached. But why take the risk? Just kick the field goal on third down. Like, I know it's a bit further away and maybe you feel like your kicker needs those yards, but what a risk to take with your playoff hopes on the line to maybe not even get the playoff.
And see, that's always going to be the forever argument. If they just have kicked the field goal and missed it, then they go, well, you could have had a chance for one more play, got that little bit closer, because they did get a few yards and they all matter. But I don't know. I just think they've overcome a lot of adversity this year. Yeah. And they might not be the most pleasing team on the eye, but at the same time, you've got to win games like that. And they pulled a win out the bag. Just like Michigan pulled a win out against Illinois and Ohio State did against Maryland and all that. All the top four teams struggled this weekend. So TCU weren't on their own there, but well done to them for getting through on that one. TCU continue, and as Ash says, one more game against Iowa State. Can they do it? Because that defense, even though that team is trash, is pretty good. So that will be one last test of their credentials. Moving back into the Pac-12 for a couple here. Washington State 31, Arizona 20. Tale of two quarterbacks again here. Ryan has been lauding Jalen Delora for Arizona, and rightly so. Had a really good season, and this Arizona Wildcats team has looked a hell of a lot better than it does in previous years. Again, another one that's been kind of a joke. Unfortunately, in this one, he couldn't stop throwing picks. 28 of 46, 357 yards, one touchdown, four interceptions on the day. You just can't do that. And they had a fumble in this game as well. Turnover luck in this game was 15.6 points in favor of Washington State. And when you only lose by 11, well, you could have won without the turnovers. Cameron Ward, on the other hand, I am a massive fan of Cameron Ward. He is this year's Trey Lance in terms of he's got all the intangibles you need for a good quarterback at the next level. Just doesn't have the experience, but he has made the move up to the FBS, which is something that Trey Lance never did. And he's looked really good at Washington State, who have 7 wins on the season and will be going bowling. He was 25 of 36, 193 yards and a touchdown. Also leading Russia, 8 carries, 59 yards and a touchdown. He is a dual threat guy, and I'm really high on him. But fortunately for Arizona, just a case of they've come far, but there is still a long way to go. Dorian Singer, their standout wide receiver, 9 receptions, 176 yards and a touchdown. The other standout, Jacob Cowing, sadly a quiet game for him. 6 receptions, 37 yards, not a great deal going on there. And on Washington State's side, so 4 picks. DB Sam Lockett on the day got 2 of them. Derek Lanford and Marnie Marsh got 1 apiece. What do we think of this one, guys?
Pac-12 action. Yeah, I mean, Washington State just ran away with it, didn't they? Delora clearly has got all the talent in the world, but as you say, just couldn't stop throwing picks. His decision-making just needs to improve. And, I mean, they got beaten by a better team at the end of the day. He had plenty of pressure in his face. They didn't give him much of a chance. He was panicked into throws, but it was hard for him in this game. I don't think that you can entirely say it was Delara's fault. But Cam Ward, I think Cam Ward's the quarterback I want in this draft. And I really, really do.
That's the temptation he holds. He is intangibles, but he's come up to the FBS and he's doing it.
He's doing it. I mean, so there's a couple of plays in this game that really kind of sold me on him. He on a 4th and 1 was gonna rush for the 4th down, ended up bobbling the snap, had about 3 players in his face and managed to dodge all of them. He had to, so that when he botched the snap, he was still about 4 or 5 yards now behind the line, managed to dodge them and then beat someone else to convert the 4th down, and then the zone read keeper for a touchdown quite close to the goal line. I know it seems like a staple of some of these NFL guys like Hurts or whoever's a mobile quarterback to be able to run that play with regularity. But as you say, inexperienced quarterback, and he just seems to be decisive and execute really, really well. And, you know, if you like elusive quarterbacks like Bryce Young, well, he's a bit taller. Cam Ward. Cam Ward's a bit taller. He looks like he could put a little meat on his bones. You could make him a bit more of a physical runner because he seems a bit sly. But there's something about him that's just really, really exciting.
Yeah, I completely agree. Cam Ward is firmly in that sort of tier. I want to say tier 2-3. Obviously, you've got the top 2 of Young and Stroud, who's been on that pedestal. And then, yeah, you have just a mess of, you can put him anywhere between like QB3 and 4 to QB10. Like, he's definitely in that sort of range. I'm intrigued by him. Obviously, another pod favorite in KJ Jefferson. Just this clump of people that you won't be able to probably separate until combine and pro days and senior bowl and such, where you'll be able to see them go up against one another and against NFL talents. And another thing I liked seeing was that Washington State's kicker has a famous father. If you noticed, it's if you remember Sebastian Janikowski, it's his son that was the kicker. I was always like, hang on, I recognize this name. Did a quick Google, I was like, oh, it's Steve Bass's son. That's quite cool. So see, yeah, it's just being one of them now that I can recognize, oh yeah, this is like the son of an NFL player, and seeing that talent come through scares me a bit, but it's quite cool at the same time.
I don't know if kicker might be on the menu this year. I don't know what his eligibility status is like, but there are some tempting kickers to be had. But yeah, I like this Washington State team. Me and Ryan argue a lot about Cam Ward. He doesn't like him. I really do like him. Going to be very interesting when his draft process comes around, because like I say, he's got all the intangibles in the world. He just needs the right team to refine them, and they may have themselves a steal. So yeah, keep an eye out for him. Staying in the Pac-12, Oregon, the Ducks, get their vengeance on Utah, who screwed them twice at the end of last season in the regular season, keep them out of the playoffs, and in the championship game when Utah will go on to win it. But Oregon have their revenge. And just like Jaden Delora screwed the game up for Arizona, Cameron Rising had a really rough outing for Utah in this one. 21 of 38, 170 yards, no touchdowns, 3 picks on the day. Just can't throw 3 picks against Oregon and this offense of theirs. As I say in that, the Bo Nix Heisman train took a little bit of a stop this week. He was 25 of 37, 287 yards, a touchdown, and an interception. So just one passing touchdown on the day. It's kind of expecting this to be like the UCLA-USC game where they just went hell for leather on one another, but they both ran a lot of plays. Utah 82, Oregon 72. The EPA minus 15 for Utah, minus 8 for Oregon. So these two offenses were not doing a great deal with the ball when they had it. Utah were only averaging 4.5 yards per play. That's 13th percentile. Oregon just 5.89, which is not a great deal better on the scale there. The defenses did much better. Utah, 7 tackles for loss, 3 passing for rushing, 8 for Oregon, 2 passing, 6 rushing. So running games were held suitably in check for this one. Oregon's top rusher only got 53 yards. Utah's only got 55. Very attritional, very aggressive. Dalton Kincaid, the star tight end at Utah, he got 11 receptions for 99 yards as he continues to get some bona fide draft hype. He's had a really, really good season. On Oregon's side, Dante Thornton had 4 receptions for 151 yards. Bennett Williams, the DB, 2 interceptions on the day. Great for him. But the defense, for the most of the part, was quite quiet. Linebacker Justin Flo, just 1 assisted tackle on the day. Noah Sewell did better. He had a pick, actually, in this and 8 tackles. But Justin Flo continues to really, really disappoint in this team this year. He was well thought of in the linebacker group this year. But well, Pac-12 action, guys. What do we think of Oregon, Utah?
Yeah, I only watched a tiny bit of it, most edit just like, you know, like the 5-minute highlights. So I probably can't speak too much onto it, but I don't, yeah, it just seemed to be like almost like every quarter it switched, obviously, well, every half pretty much. So Oregon obviously went into the half 17-3 up, they're decent. And then they sort of let Utah back into it a tiny bit. And it just, in that third quarter where they went scoreless, Utah scored 14. After the fumble, but it's just, yeah, I can't really speak too much onto it other than saying,
okay,
not really my game of the week.
I disagree with you, Ant, on Bo Nix. If anything, I think this strengthened his campaign because he came into this game not even looking like he was going to play, like he was going to be out because of an injury to his left leg, I think. And coming into this game, he decided he was going to play and play through the pain, which is going to play well with people just as a kind of gritty thing. But for a rushing quarterback whose half of his game is running the ball, he had to be a statue in this game. He had 2 rushes in this game, and the one was a kneel down, and one was converting the 4th down to win the game. Those were the only rushes he had in this game. So he was forced to win it with his arm. And he had an interception, he did. But if you take a rushing quarterback out of being able to run the ball, it completely changes the dynamics of what he's used to in terms of throwing. And like, yeah, he threw an interception. But he controlled this game from start to finish. And I came away from thinking that he's a gadget. Like before, I thought he was a gadget quarterback who ran the ball and had a bit with his arm. And in this game against a good Utah defense, ranked 10th, and he did bloody well being forced to be a pocket passer. I was really impressed by him. But I have a new crush for next year's draft in Thornton, the wide receiver for Oregon.
Yeah.
I mean, he hasn't had much production so far, 518 yards in 2 years, but the guy is 6'4.5". He's fast. He's a bit raw, needs to work on his route running a bit, but he's got a bit of X receiver muscle to him. And I think if he has a big year next year, people are going to be raving about him. And you were talking about the Dalton Kincaid from Utah. I mean, the only knock on him is his height, isn't it? Because he's a full 2 inches smaller than Thornton. And Thornton's a wide receiver and he's a tight end. But that rising to Kincaid connection is really something to watch.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, Kincaid's basically a wide receiver anyhow. I don't know why they still really classify him as a tight end, but they do. I mean, they lost the other star tight end earlier in the year, so they've had to use him a little bit more there. But, yeah, interesting game. I mean, Utah has not been as good this year, so maybe not much unexpected that Oregon would win this one. But they got their revenge. They're going to the Pac-12. Well, they should be going to the Pac-12 title game again. It's not 100% in the bag yet, but the odds are they are going to be there. So we'll see how they get on against USC, which will probably be the matchup. Right, let's move this on. Still a few to go from the pick watch. Oh, so near, yet so far. The Duke Blue Devils, who have had a real good year to this point so far. Another one of these underachieving teams who've been kind of looked down upon with scorn for years have suddenly turned their program around. They are 7-4 on the season. They were 7-3 before this weekend. I bet on them to beat the Pittsburgh Panthers, and they came up this close, but unfortunately they kind of got behind and they were never really able to get this. But a 2-point loss to Pittsburgh is no mean feat, although Pittsburgh actually have the same record as them this year. But Duke are a much better team than before. Keevan Slovis continues to suck. He's terrible. 15 of 32, 190 yards, a touchdown and 2 picks. Podcaster, my absolute favorite sleeper running back of this draft, Israel Abanikanda, continues to be great. 17 carries, 113 yards and a touchdown. He is that Pittsburgh offense, and I will not hear anything about it. Otherwise, the Pittsburgh defense continues to be pretty good this year. Savochie Dennis leads the team in tackles at 14 on the day. He was a busy man indeed. On Duke's side, really good day for Riley Leonard again, who's been the star find at quarterback for Duke this season. 24 of 45, obviously had to throw in a lot of behind in this, but he got 290 yards, 3 touchdowns on the day. No turnovers for him. The run game got 0 going and did not really help him. Duke had to move away from it early. Jordan Moore, the wide receiver, 14 receptions, 199 yards, and a touchdown for him there. The defense, again, had a pretty decent day, but very narrow. But this Duke team have shown that they are not a laughing stock anymore, and they are going to be something to fear going forward. Any of you guys, any thoughts on this one?
The fumble return touchdown turned the game. Not to play what ifs, but if Waters doesn't fumble that ball and it doesn't get returned for a touchdown, maybe we could be talking a different game and saying that Duke are one of the rising teams in the ACC, which scares me a tiny bit as obviously an ACC fan. Who are knowing we're moving away from divisions next year. If that doesn't happen, things could have been different. And it just, yeah, I completely agree on Israel as well. He's up there with like Chase Brown for me in terms of my draft crushes this year at running back.
Yeah, I can't really add too much more to it than that. I mean, the lack of interceptions for Leonard is what's the word? It's misleading. Because Duke turned the ball over on downs. I say Duke, it's Duke, isn't it? I should say Duke. They turned the ball over on downs twice late. In the second half, they went 3 and out, downs, fumble return touchdown, touchdown, downs, touchdown. Like, they didn't... they didn't convert when they needed to in clutch moments. They either fumbled the ball... Well, they didn't convert. The first one that they lost on downs was a 7-play, 15-yard drive. And they threw the ball five of those seven times. Like, I'm sorry, but it's no good not throwing an interception if you turn the ball over on downs twice. Like, your three touchdowns, no interceptions sounds great, but you put it into context and Duke should have won this game. They should have. Pittsburgh were terrible. Like, I don't. Slovis is a rubbish quarterback, and he's not even UDFA, like, priority quality quarterback anymore. And he was thought of as like a top five pick a couple of years ago, which is ridiculous. And the only person making it tick, as you say, is Abanikanda. It's the only person worth anything on that offense.
Yeah, agreed. Yeah. But in terms of Israel, he's done his stock a world of good this season. You're going to see a lot of him heading into draft season. So, well done to Pittsburgh. Unfortunate for Duke, but this still represents a hell of a season for Duke. They have a chance to finish with 8 wins on the year, and they will be going bowling for the first time in a little while. I can't remember how long, but it's been a few years since they went bowling. Right, a couple more left. Bedlam. Bedlam was such a one-sided affair and a rank-ass disappointment. Oklahoma State 13, Oklahoma 28, and this is an Oklahoma side who have been rank bad this season. Oklahoma State, after a very positive start, have just really derailed, and it's just not happening in there anymore. I mean, Oklahoma are good when Dylan Gabriel plays, and Dylan Gabriel was back this week. He played well. And they won. In terms of Oklahoma State's case, Spencer Sanders, again, when it matters, not turning up to the ball. 4 interceptions thrown on the day. Threw 1 touchdown pass. Had 381 yards, but there was no run game to speak. And when you're turning it over 4 times in a row, you just can't do that. It was a 10-point turnover luck margin in this one, which, again, if you had it together, Oklahoma State could have won this game, but they didn't. And the shocking part, Oklahoma State ran 102 plays from scrimmage. 102 offensive plays to 74 from Oklahoma. And they still managed to loss and lose. Their EPA was minus 23.63. I mean, yeah, this is just about as bad as you can get. They're looking at the stats here, there is barely anything in green when it comes to percentiles for stats in this game. It's just rotten across the board. Oklahoma, their defense actually came to play. I will give them one thing for this. 16 tackles for loss. 16. 10 in the passing game, 6 in the rushing game. Oklahoma State tried so many times to throw screens, and Oklahoma kept blowing them up. And when you do that, you're just not going to win. They also had 6 sacks on the day as well. So Spencer Sanders as well is throwing 4 picks. Gets sacked 6 times for his trouble as well. A really rough day at the ball for him. And Bedlam goes back to Oklahoma. Big 12 action, boys. Anyone watch Bedlam?
I mean, so there were 20 drives in the first half, which is just like, what? Yeah. 20 drives? It's ridiculous. And between the two, they punted 20 times. Like, oh, come on, guys. You go 28-0 down. I'm sorry, but I'm switching it off. I am. Sorry, Ash.
Fair. All I was going to say is I feel sorry for Dylan Gabriel. The guy transferred from UCF after carrying that team to go to Oklahoma to try and stake his claim for the draft and put himself in explosive offense and say, here's me, come and pick me. And it's just gone the same way. He's having to carry that team. It feels so bad for him after being strung up in the state of Florida for so long.
Yeah, it's a bit hard to invest in a game like Matt says. Oklahoma got all their points in the first quarter. So they actually, through the last 3 quarters of the game, Oklahoma did not score a single point and they still won by 15. So that just tells you the tale of the tape for this one. It was rough. There were some good individual performances. Eric Gray, the running back of Oklahoma, he's had a quietly good year. 90 yards and a touchdown for him. But outside of that, I mean, defensively, the Oklahoma defense had a field day and a half. Like I say, 6 sacks, 4 picks, all spread out amongst a lot of them. And this is 16 tackles for loss. I can't remember the last time Oklahoma did that. Their defense is usually bad. Right, 2 more left here. Oh, my favorite one of the week. I was the only one to bet for them, and they came through for me. The Hawaii Rainbow Warriors took down the University of Nevada and Las Vegas Rebels for their third win this season, 31-25. Braden Schrager, the quarterback for Hawaii, he's had a quietly pretty decent year by his standards. 16 of 27, 202 yards, 3 TDs. Dedrick Parson, the running back, got 115 yards and a touchdown as well. It was a good day for Hawaii. UNLV, they've actually, their quarterback, Doug Brumfield, had a really good year. And UNLV could still have made a bowl if they'd won this one. I think me and Ryan predicted them to win two games if they were lucky, but they've got four on the season, so they've done all right. Doug Brumfield, 288 yards, touchdown and an interception, but I'm interested to see him. I think he's only a freshman this year, so a few more years might be a name to watch out for here. Yeah. This is a battle of some of the basement dwellers, so if anyone's got any comments, fine. If not, I will move it on. Anyone got anything to say about Hawaii and UNLV?
Nope.
Okay. Right, let's move on. Last one of the pick watch fixtures, Mountain West action, Boise State beating Wyoming. Boise State confirming their spot in the Mountain West title game with this. If Wyoming would have won, they would still have been able to make it, but they can't anymore. Wyoming 17, Boise State 20. Get the stat line for the Wyoming quarterback. So Jaden Clemens, 3 of 16 for 30 yards and 3 interceptions. So he threw as many interceptions as he threw completed passes and had it for 30 yards. Titus Swen, the running back, is again the one who's done the damage this year for them. 212 yards and a touchdown on the day for him. He also got one of the 3 completed passes as well. And Wyoming actually led this one, silly enough, at halftime, but Boise State came back and won this. It was an ugly, ugly game. George Helani, the running back for Boise, Ryan is massively high on him. 20 carries, 132 yards, over 6.5 yards per carry. So it was a good day for the running backs, Titus Swen, George Helani. Outside of that, very little offensively in either of these games. Again, anyone got to mention, or am I moving on to some of the others?
J.L. Skinner.
Oh, yeah. Complimentary J.L. Skinner tweet. Because, yeah, J.L. Skinner is a absolute madman. He got 2 picks on this day. You want a safety for the next draft, guys? This is a guy. He is an absolute freaking monster. 2 picks, 5 tackles on the day for him. Yeah, this guy is just something different. He is a fridge with legs who can move like the most athletic of guys. And he hits you like a fridge. It's seriously, you want to go and check some of this guy's highlight tape. You feel pain through the screen watching some of the tackles he lays down on guys. He's one of the best downhill threats as a safety I've seen in some time. Right, have you got anything to add, Matt?
Nope.
Right, let's add on to a few of the other games here. So, huge, huge shock in the SEC. Tennessee having such a great season, but it's all gone wrong at the last minute. Unfortunately, Hendon Hooker gone with a torn ACL, which who knows what that does for his draft class. But to sort of rub salt into the wound, playing the South Carolina Gamecocks, who've been met for this season. They were 6-4 coming into this one. South Carolina won this 63-38. Tennessee had a 60 burger dropped on them by the Gamecocks, who were not even close to scoring that this season. Spencer Rattler, the forgotten number one prospective pick from last season, finally had a good game. He has been bad this year, but he had the kind of game which reminds you of the level of talent that this man has. 30 of 37, 438 yards, 6 touchdowns thrown on the day. They had 3 rushing touchdowns as well, but they shared the hell out of the these touchdowns. Josh Van got 2, Jalen Brooks got 1, Jahein Bell got 2. He's the running back. He had 82 yards on the ground as well, so a good day for him. In terms of Tennessee, I mean, this just was rough. 25 of 42 for Hendon Hooker before his injury, threw 3 touchdown passes. I mean, neither of these defenses were good. Jabari Small got another rushing touchdown. Cedric Tillman, 2 touchdowns receiving on the day. I know he's got a lot of admirers in that Tennessee team, but yeah. This gentleman is what we call in the business a shellacking.
And who came in relief for for Hendon Hooker but former Michigan quarterback Joe Milton? And I mean, he went 4 of 8 for 108 and a touchdown and a quarterback rating of 91 in those 8 plays. God, that's probably the best stretch of 8 plays he's had in his entire career. But it's a real shame for Hendon, isn't it? And they just couldn't get it done. You know, they're big receivers. Put up some numbers. You know, Hyatt had 6 for 65, Tillman 9 for 81 and 2 tutties. But when you look at how they blew teams away through the air in previous weeks and going back some now, that isn't the sort of numbers which is going to win you this game. You need to have a receiver go for like 200 and high 150s, 160s or something like that. But South Carolina just dominated. And Rattler, like, I like to preach sometimes about quarterbacks, and it's kind of like cornerbacks. If you've seen that they can do it a few times, it doesn't have to be the season, but people are going to buy into the traits as long as they see that you can do it once or twice. And this is the sort of game which is going to get Rattler drafted, and it probably won't be on day 3, and it probably won't be on day 1. But, you know, before I was just kind of thinking he's really tanked his stock, he's going to be a round 5 pick. But I kind of think this puts him in sort of comp pick territory in round 3 at this point. And someone could get a steal, but my God, do I get Zach Wilson kind of arsehole-y vibes from him.
Completely agree. And I can already predict which team's going to pick him based off those vibes completely. He is probably going to be picked by the Cowboys to back up Dak, because obviously Dak's had the injury history the past couple of years. Because they always do it. Look at last year, they took Sam Williams out of Ole Miss, who had like all those allegations around him. They just have that reputation of saying, oh yeah, you've got some character issues, we'll take you here. And Jerry just has something where he can get them sort of right, where sometimes they do have slip-ups. For the most part, he seems to crack down on those character issues quite a lot.
Cowboys, Raiders, book it.
True,
I can't remember who it is, but me and Ryan had found the attitude issue player for the Cowboys. I can't remember who it was off the top of my head, but I would agree with you. That's probably the way he's going to go there. So, yeah, Tennessee got absolutely shellacked. Their season's dead. The playoff hopes are dead. Yeah, come back next year, see what you can do. But that defense got ripped. And it's not a defense that gives a point often. Obviously, they gave up 49 to Bama, but Bama's Bama. Outside of that, I think Florida were the next best team who'd scored against them. It was just 33. So it's not like they get loads of points put down on them very often. But South Carolina, it was just crazy. Just seemed like they had a man open by 10 yards every time Rattler threw the ball. So very ugly outing for them. So what to mention next. So I said earlier, the top four, all the college football playoff ranking top four struggled this weekend. So Georgia beat Kentucky by 16-6. Ohio State beat Maryland 43-30. But that was in thanks due to them strip sacking and injuring Taulier on the last play of the game and taking him for a return touchdown. It was a one score game up to that point. Maryland were driving to win that game. They were 17-10 down in this one going into the fourth quarter, and they managed to slip through by the skin of their chinny chin chin in this. They won 19-17. It was a battle of the running backs. Blake Corum got 108 yards and a touchdown. Chase Brown got 140 yards and 2 touchdowns. He's really solidified his draft prospects. He's been the leading rusher in the nation pretty much all season. He's had that title through week, because they played week 0. And he's actually been top of the rushing stats since week 0, which is crazy for him. And then you had obviously TCU we talked about earlier, who's so close to losing to Baylor. I mean, just in a chat about the top four, guys, I mean, overall, were you disappointed by some teams? Were you impressed by others? What did you make of the top four's performance this week overall?
So I was most disappointed by Georgia. Like, sorry, Kentucky are not a good team. They've proven this year that despite having the quarterback, that whatever he is now, Will Levis, that Kentucky have been beaten by some ranked teams this year, and Georgia put 16 on them. I know they only conceded 6, but my God, you need to do better than that if you're going to convince me that you're a good team. And I know they beat Tennessee when they were at their pomp, but this game has convinced me that Georgia are beatable this year.
Ash, any thoughts on the top four?
I think they're all proven they're beatable. So even Michigan, as much as we obviously hate to say it as Lions fans, and I'm going to probably inspire some hate in the comments. I was actually supporting Illinois because of Chase Brown. Like, as I said earlier, he's been my draft crush since week zero. And he has pretty much carried that team so much so that now he today accepted his Senior Bowl invite and he's got all the draft nicks coming out and saying he actually might sneak into day two as someone playing for Illinois, which when I first started against college football, I didn't even recognize as a big team. Obviously, we've got Kirby from there who I love to pieces. You've got Witherspoon, the cornerback, who I know me and Ant are both high on, who could sneak his way into day one as one of the best man covered corners in the league, in the college game. And then you've got Chase Brown, this running back who's carrying this team and could legit be a good workhorse in the league. It's outstanding to see. But yeah, all the top four are beatable. It's one of those years, as I said, LSU, who are looking like favourites to make sneak in if one of them slip up. We beat them and with the last second thought, everyone this year has been beatable. There's been games where they should have won. So FSU, we should have beat NC State after we unfortunately injured Devin Leary on a completely legit play that was not personal foul from necessary for us, despite what the refs say. We
and
should have beat
I
them.
Say.
That's what you say, Ant. Yeah, that's why. But yeah, we should have beat them, but then we lost. Everyone this year has had a couple of those games where it just should have been all theirs and they've just lost it.
Can I just talk about the Ohio State game? Because
go for it.
I'm going to pour one out for Taulia Tagovailoa, because in a battle between CJ Stroud, presumptive potential number one overall pick, and another Tagovailoa, Tagovailoa was the better quarterback in this game. More dynamic, more accurate, had to do more with less. Like, I know that he's another slight quarterback, but from what I've seen from him in college, I think he might be the better Tagovailoa. Like, you come up against this Ohio State team and you perform like that, you're going to get a lot of people like you. And I know that he's had a really good year this year and people have kind of poo-pooed it a bit because the schedule hasn't been that hard for Maryland and they've lost some games which they probably should have won and that sort of thing. But he's an exciting guy. And then on the Ohio State side, they've got a running back who's a true freshman who's going to be absolutely incredible for the next 2 years, and that's Dallin Hayden. He went in for 3 touchdowns on 27 carries for 146 yards and just amazing contact balance, ran hard with power, but could stretch as well. Normally beats the first tackle, like really, really impressive guy. And he's the reason why Ohio State won. It wasn't Harrison as wide receiver. It wasn't Stroud as quarterback. Hayden was the guy who took them to that victory. And they're bloody lucky that they got there.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think, thankfully, his injury was not too bad, because it looked pretty bad, Talia's injury did, but I think they just said it's a bruise on the knee, so he is going to be able to play. Obviously, it's going to hurt a lot during the game. That's what's held Talia back, is not performing in big games. I think last season, me and Ryan were all in on them when they were playing well to begin with, and I think they came up against Iowa in a big game, and he threw like 3 picks in the game and just really sort of bet the bed against them. And that's always the thing that's really held him back a little bit. But he looked a lot better in this. And you know what? I know that the box score says that Ohio State did better. But for me, Michigan's win was more impressive this weekend. That Illinois defense is still ranked 2nd in the nation for a reason. It's damn good. And there are going to be a lot of players from that defense going in the draft this year. That Maryland defense is awful, and I mean atrocious. And yet they were only able to put up 43. I say only 43, but you were at 29 until the last couple of minutes of this game. You struggled to put down points. I am still not sold on Ohio State, and I still think that Michigan are going to beat them by 3 scores. I honestly do. I think Michigan are going to kill them in the trenches, and it ain't even going to be close. And I saw nothing this weekend that would change my mind, despite Michigan struggling, because that Illinois team, this is a lot better. Other fixtures of note I want to mention. Georgia Tech took down UNC and maybe kill Drake May's Heisman campaign. They won that one 21-17 at UNC as well. UNC still had a real outside chance maybe of the playoffs. Only one loss this season, but that has been, as they say, completely banjaxed at this point. It ain't happening. Navy service team took down ranked UCF 17-14 as the service teams continue to be, I don't know. We had a lot of expectation for them this year, and they have been hit and miss all over the place. But yeah, be a ranked team. UCF have been doing pretty well, and that has screwed, well, it's not screwed UCF's American chances, but would have been a lot easier winning that one for them. So yeah, well done to Navy on that one. James Madison squeaking out a win against Georgia Southern 42-40. What a season it has been for them. First season in the FBS, and they would be bowl eligible if they were allowed to be this year, and they could be fighting for a Sun Belt title if they were allowed to this year. But unfortunately, the rules state that they are not allowed to, but still been a hell of a season for them, and they deserve mention for that. Any other games that anyone has any notes on, wants to mention? Obviously, there were a lot of good games this weekend. A lot of good games. Not too many upsets, but still a lot good going on.
Not from me, man.
Oh, okay. We'll mention Florida State, Ash. How did they do this weekend?
Decent. So, obviously, beat Louisiana. It's sort of like our warm-up game for Florida, since, obviously, the Florida coach, Billy Napier, used to do Louisiana. We did so well. We managed to get our fourth-string walk-on quarterback on for a drive to give him some snaps. That's how in control we were of the game. They managed to sneak back a tiny bit at the end when we had like our first string on. But for like that first half, I think we've gone 11 quarters until that game. We went 11 quarters without letting in a touchdown, which is just insane considering I was scared about the defense coming in this year with the loss of Jermaine Johnson second. And now we've got Jared Verse, who's transferred in for Auburn, and now have made himself a top 20 draft pick.
Yeah, they've had a really good season, in fairness to them. And yeah, one more. Against Florida Gators, can they round it out? We'll talk about it very shortly. SW line in the chat goes, Anthony, from your lips to God's ears, but I guess we're not watching the same teams. McCarthy's going to have to play his best game for Michigan. They have a chance of winning. He struggled lately. I don't think it's going to rely on McCarthy on this one. For me, the Michigan-Ohio State game is all about trench warfare, and I just feel like that Michigan offensive line is going to kill whatever Ohio State put out against them. I think it's going to be a Blake Corum game. He's healthy. He's playing in it. Not sure about Donovan Edwards, but Michigan always find a way for it. Whereas Ohio State, the offense is good, but I don't trust their defense. I think it's going to be high scoring. I'm putting the over-under at 80. I really believe that. But we'll see. I might be wrong. I am just a random guy on the internet talking about this, so I could be talking out my ass as I do about a lot of things, but it's going to be interesting. I'm just glad one of them's going to lose. I think they're both frauds this season. I think they play scrub schedules and they don't deserve to be up there, and one of them is going to lose and it'll make me happy. So, hey-ho, I have things on those. Right, so that is everything for the Week 12 review. And we will move it on now to preview in week 13 before we get on out of here this evening. So we'll go through the pick watch fixtures as always. I believe you guys have already made your choices for this. Me and Ryan usually do it on air here, but still feel free to chime in with your thoughts and opinions on these games, and we will get that done. So let me get the fixtures up so I can do the ones after week 13. First up, the Egg Bowl. This is rivalry week. A lot of rivals playing one another, a lot on the line. Mississippi State at Ole Miss. Now, just hearing that, you're thinking, oh yeah, Ole Miss are going to win this comfortably. Well, hold the brakes a second. Ole Miss are on a two-game skid at this moment in time. They got absolutely obliterated by Arkansas this past weekend, and I'm not using fancy words just to try and, you know, make KJ Jefferson sound better, but, I mean, he was pretty good. Crazy thing was, Miss State had 700 yards of offense in this game. Ole Miss, sorry, against Arkansas, had two 200-yard rushes in the game, had 700 yards of offense, still only mustered up about 23 points, I think it was. Crazy. But Arkansas still killed them. So, yeah, Egg Bowl time. Ole Miss, two losses in a row. Lane Kiffin, who knows what the hell's going on with them. A beat reporter decided to put out earlier this week that he had accepted an invitation to the Auburn job, potentially marking him as the next great villain of the SEC. But Lane Kiffin himself came onto Twitter later that evening and said, oh, this is the first time hearing about it. So at the minute, it's not happening. He's still there. But this is interesting. It's not as clear-cut as it's made out to me. Ole Miss, like I say, on a two-game skid, lot of issues behind the scenes. Jackson Dart not playing well at all at this moment in time. Mississippi State, they have had an up-and-down year, but in Will Rogers, they have a guy who's thrown the second-most yards, I believe, in all of college football this season. It is an offense that can put points on the board and can do it very well. I mean, they're closely matched. Ole Miss are 8-3 on the year. Miss State are 7-4. I believe Ole Miss have won the last three in a row, so they have sort of dominated it going forward. But I ain't sure it's as clear-cut as it's made out to be. I'll have you do two guys' thoughts first, then I'll make my pick.
My only thought is, firstly, the Lane Kiffin thing. I'm hoping he's printed out that tweet, put it on the notice board and says, see, you've got to play for me. If you want me to stay, show me. Don't know how it will turn out. It could demoralize the players and think, oh yeah, he's on his way out anyway. Let's just sack it in, protect ourselves, hit the transfer portal. Or it could really fire them up and think, hang on, it's rivalry week. It's got that, plus the added energy of our head coach might go to somewhere that equitable kind of place in terms of reputation, like in terms of results, but a lot more resources from what I've read, because I was initially confused when the news came out. Then I found out that they've got a lot more like resources and that for him to play with. So I could see that. And yeah, Will Rogers, yeah, air raid offense, he's seventh. I've just double checked. He's seventh in the passing yards, which
he's dropped then.
He's dropped, yeah. Drake May, Austin Reed, or it's coming, the Arizona quarterback all climbed up. But yeah, it's gonna be a shootout and it's gonna be fun to watch.
Yeah, it'll be a fun to watch game. But you're right, it's closer than it looks, this one. But I can't look past Ole Miss. They just seem to find a way. And when Lane Kiffin is in your corner, it's scrappy and it's not always conventional. But you seem to win more games than you don't.
Yeah. Agreed. I've been trying to justify picking Mississippi State on this one, but they're on the road, rival game. I think Ole Miss are going to have a point to prove. I think Ole Miss wins, so I'm putting down Ole Miss for that one. Oh, next up, the Florida rivalry. I'm going to go straight to Ash here. Florida at Florida State. The initial ones for this one, I can find it because I just had the damn thing up. Florida State 10-point favorites for this. The over under is 58 on the game. Ash, thoughts on the Florida rivalry, and try to make it unbiased.
I will try. So I think it actually could be a shootout despite how well our defense has played. I think we're like second in the nation in terms of passing yards allowed. Definitely first in the ACC. We're one of the best defenses in not giving up explosive plays. We've got Fabian Lovett, who is one of my draft crushes, who's come back from injury and revitalized our defensive line. And we've just got that fire up of just having won over them because they've beat us the past couple of times. It's the first time since 2016 that we could become kings of the state after beating Miami early in the season. And I just can see it. Anthony Richardson will have a last-minute drive, a game-winning drive. He can win it all, and then he throws a pick six just to deflate Florida completely. Just that. I try and be unbiased, but I just can't. Especially since we have the second highest-graded quarterback in college football under center, Jordan Travis, the higher-graded than only quarterback higher-graded than him right now is Drake May.
Yeah, I see. So, I know that you love to take the piss out of Ash about Jordan Travis, and I know that his pro transfer is maybe... I think he's a better college quarterback than he is a pro quarterback. But in a battle between someone who I believe, due to traits, is going to go in the first round this year in Anthony Richardson, I really do think he'll be a late first round guy no matter what happens the rest of the season. Jordan Travis is the better quarterback in this game. Like, that's the difference between these two. At the college level, on what they're doing right now in terms of production, Travis is the better quarterback. And you know what? They probably have a comparable running game. Benson's a fantastic running back. I just don't see Florida winning this. No way. Like, I don't see this being close. I think that the line is kind to Florida. They've been awful this year. And they don't deserve to be close. I think the line has gotten shorter because it's a rivalry game, and so somehow they'll play harder in this one. But I don't see it.
The trouble is, rivalry week, odds go out the window. Odds mean nothing on rivalry week, and it's crazy.
Like, they lost to Vanderbilt!
Yeah. Have you seen some of the teams Oklahoma have lost to this year? And they whooped Oklahoma State. It's crazy. It would just be like Florida to lose to Vanderbilt and then put away Florida State. But in a shock horror announcement to all, I will pick Florida State.
Hey.
And if they don't, hey. Ash, me and you are going to have some serious words. Right.
Hey, he only needs 181 yards for him to do the article on him.
Yeah, so I'm going to be hoping to God that he doesn't. But, I mean, if he does, then I win in the Pig Watch show. I'm giving myself stakes on both sides. Next up, huge, huge fixture in the American this week. So we have Tulane at Cincinnati. A lot on the line for this one. So not only can the winner of this... So the winner of this game is going to host the AAC Championship on December the 3rd. So getting home advantage for the championship game is big. But whoever wins this is also going to put themselves in the best position to claim the coveted Group of Five spot for a New Year's Six Bowl. So basically the big bowl games that get the most attention, the most money awarded to you, gets given to the best Group of Five team record at the end of the year. So they're both in play for this. So there are some real stakes on the line in this one. Cincinnati are 9-2. On the year, they are 6-1 in the American. They've won the last four in a row over Tulane, and they will look to extend their 32-game winning streak at home, Nippert Stadium. Tulane, for them, they're 9-2 and 6-1, just like Cincinnati. They're 4-0 on the road this season, including a victory over number 15-ranked Kansas State. And as I say, this one's big, because the game... UCF, who were right behind on 5-2, hold wins over both teams. So if UCF beat USF in the battle of other Florida teams this week, the loser will not make the championship game at all. So big, big consequences for losing this one. Cincinnati favored by 2.5 for this one. Fellas, where are your predictions for this?
So it's a battle of two teams with good records, but who actually just secretly aren't that good teams. Like, in terms of, you look at the record, and if you came away thinking they're 2-9-2 teams, therefore they must be good, neither side has a ranked victory this year. You know, it doesn't seem particularly good. Now,
they technically do. You have ranked wins based on ranked teams at the time.
At the time, okay, but not anymore.
No current ranked teams.
No current.
They have been teams when they're ranked.
So if you look at similar teams that they've played, then Cincinnati beat SMU 29-27 in week 6 or 7, and Tulane blew them out last week 59-24. But I don't know. I just see two very similar sides in terms of quality. And so I take the home team. I think Cincinnati take this one. But I gather that I'm outnumbered on the pick watch. So, Ash, what do you reckon?
See, I just did it purely off feel, to be honest. I know that Cincinnati are obviously the bigger name. They were in the playoff last year. But I just, in my head, I'm like, they lost so much talent to the draft last year. And from what the little I've seen of them, they haven't really managed to fully recover from that. And Tulane, as you said, last week they beat SMU, who obviously were the victors of that amazing, massive, massive shootout where it seemed every single time the ball moved, it was in the end zone for a touchdown. So I just feel like they've got a tiny bit more momentum coming in. So I know the line favours Cincinnati, but just I can just feel Tulane just getting the upset in inverted commas and winning the game.
I must correct myself, by the way. I'm sorry. It wasn't right on ESPN what I had. For some reason, USF are ranked 22 when Tulane lost to them a couple of weeks ago. But they beat Kansas State in week three. And they're ranked. They're ranked 12. So I was wrong. They do have a win against the currently ranked team. Sorry, Ant.
No, it's fine. No, it's fine. Yeah, see, I'm like Ashley. I go off on field. Tulane have been very good this year. They've been ranked for the first time in a very long time. They won an all-ranked matchup at home recently. I know the team aren't in there anymore. I can't remember who it was, but they were all ranked. They hosted an all-ranked game for the first time since like the 40s. It was mad. I feel like they've been the better team this year. Having said that, Cincinnati lost all that talent in the draft and still they've come back and performed better this year. But their strength is their defense, not the offense. And I just don't know. Home advantage would say this one wins, but I just have a sneaky suspicion that Tulane can pull this out. For me, they've been the better of the two sides. And I think they deserve it more than Cincinnati do now. Obviously, Cincinnati could just blow them out and fate not work for them. But I'm going to go Tulane. I think I'm going to pick Tulane for that one. Next one, and I wish Ryan was here for this because I know what he'd say, but Arizona State at Arizona. Arizona have not beaten Arizona State for some time. How many is it? It has been a very long time. Ryan has the exact figures, but this has been a one-sided rivalry for a long-ass time now. But Arizona have had the better season. They are 4-7 on the year. Arizona State are 3-8. It has been an absolutely rotten season, really, for them. The line, Arizona, favored by 4 at home. So that kind of goes with the narrative. That's kind of like a home advantage there. Maybe a little bit of an advantage as well, which would make sense. The over-under is 65.5, so they believe there's going to be points in this game. So Jaden Delora on one side, Xavier Valladay at running back, who's had an amazing season and has kept Arizona State in a lot of games himself. So this is kind of good passer against good running back defenses. Arizona State, they've both been rough. Arizona have given up a lot of points despite winning more games. Arizona State, I think they got blown out, 31-8 this weekend by Oregon State. It's not been pretty either side of the ball. I think this is going to be a high-scoring game. I think the over-under's way short. Again, I'd be putting it up at about 80 for this. Thoughts on the Pac-12 here, guys? And be careful if Ryan's listening. Don't talk too much smack about ASU.
They just said not to talk too much smack. I'll keep it short. Arizona is going to win the Territorial Cup for the first time in 5 years.
Oh, that's it. It's been a while.
It's 5 years, yeah. Something like three and a half K years or something.
It's a battle of two bad teams, and Arizona are clearly better. Like, it comes down to the quarterback. Delora is a better quarterback, and if he doesn't shoot himself in the foot like he did on Saturday, he'll be fine.
The only trouble is when you have such a long record, 5 years, you have not won the rivalry game. It sort of has as much as a mental impact on you, as much as, you know, it's like psychological as more as it is anything. And they may be better this year, but they are going to be under real pressure to bring the Territorial Cup back home. And we know what pressure does to teams. We've seen it with teams the Lions have played recently, most recently the Giants. When teams get put under pressure, weird things happen. I think that Arizona State are going to upset them. It's an upset, but I just think sometimes these things happen for a reason. And, you know, I've got to go with my gut feeling on this. I just don't trust Jaden Delora as much as Ryan does. Right, let's move this on. MAC Attack action with the Michigan Trophy on the line. Central Michigan at Eastern Michigan. Eastern have beaten Western this year, so a victory over Central will give them the Michigan MAC Trophy. Eastern have had a wonderful year under Chris Kreiden. They are bowl eligible. I mean, they've been bowl eligible most years under him, so you go, well, that's not really an achievement, but Central Michigan is known very much in footballing terms as a place where you can't win football games. difficult to win. It's a hard program to go winning. And they won 7 games this year. They're 7-4. And Central Michigan on the flip side are 4-7. It's been a rough year for them and Western, neither of whom are going to a bowl game. Thoughts on Michigan MAC action, gentlemen?
I mean, like you say, Eastern have had a terrific season. They've knocked off some good teams on that stretch. So I like looking at similar teams with this. So Eastern have got a loss to Buffalo, which Central did win a couple of weeks ago. But they blew away Western when Western beat Central. And that's the most recent game. You lose at home to Western, and then you have to face Eastern on the road. It feels like an emotional game. It will just get the better of the team that isn't quite there at the moment. And Eastern can ease into this knowing they're already bowl eligible and they're not really playing for anything else. The pressure's off them. Despite the trophy on the line, despite it being a rivalry game, you're going to have Central be far more desperate to win this game than Eastern will be. So give me Eastern. I think this will be a fairly comfortable game.
Yeah, completely agree. I can almost repeat what I said with Cincinnati, except for Central just not replay, not at all been able to cope with the loss of talent. So obviously, Central lost Gedecky and the other tackle whose name I should remember that went to the Colts and has been performing bad for them, and Caleb Ellaby. They've lost some key pieces and they just haven't been replacing it. And it's just all crushing, come crashing down for them. So yeah, and Eastern just doing well. So yeah, give me Eastern as well.
Yeah. I've been really good. I don't think I've actually got Mac one wrong this year. My, despite the league being a dumpster fire, I've been pretty good on my Mac betting. So I like to think I know the league a little bit better than some of the others. I'm going to take Eastern as well. I think they're the better team. And I hope they win the Michigan Mac trophy. I really like Chris Brighton and the job he has done there. Like I say, when you go to a place where it's hard to win, to see them come up with such a decent team is something that should be admired. Big game next. Literally, it's called the big game. Michigan at Ohio State. Don't need to introduce this one. It's the big rivalry in the Big Ten. Winner goes to the college football playoffs. Loser, more than likely, doesn't go to the college football playoffs. Ohio State favored by 8 in this one. Fellas, time to make some Michigan fans happy or unhappy. Where are we going for the big game?
I wish this was against the spread so I could hedge myself a bit more. But yeah, I have to make the Michigan fans happy. Just Blake Corum, I know he's officially on, at least in the score app that I use, his list is questionable with that knee injury. But he's if playing. Is he playing? Yeah, then definitely give him Michigan. Because I always like looking at their like the difference between the offenses and defenses, I can just see Corum and just ripping them right up the middle kind of thing. I know Stroud has the weapons and all that. But yeah, I can just see it. The pressure's on, as you said. It's at Ohio State Stadium as well. So imagine if Michigan get an easy score in the first quarter, the fans might turn, it might get to Stroud, and it might just all come crumbling down.
They've not won at Columbus in a very long time either.
22 years.
Yep.
22 years. I'm not someone who buys into history like that. I think that the team that plays right now is the team which matters the most. However, this is a Michigan team which has built its foundation on good defense and a solid run game. Now, Blake Corum will probably play. His x-rays have come back fine, but he is banged up. You saw the way he went down on Saturday. It was not good for them. Like, he was in a bad way, and he will not be going in at 100%. And he is the identity of the team. And with no backup running back in Edwards, because he probably ain't going, it makes them... I think McCarthy will be playing a part in this game. And I think that Ohio State, despite what I said about what happened with them and Maryland last week, I think that at home, that Stroud and Harrison and that freshman running back get it done. I really do. I think OSU are going to bring this one home. Despite what I'm wearing, I'm picking OSU because the pick watch is more important than me going for the team that I have sympathies with.
Yeah. And, you know, I hold Michigan to a higher standard than anyone else because they're in state and everyone has a bias towards them. So I always hold Michigan to a higher standard. level than literally any other team in college football. You've got to convince me much more than others, just because, yeah, like I say, homerism with it. But for me, easy Michigan win. I think that no matter who takes place at running back, I think they'll run over them. And I just don't trust the Ohio State defense to keep them off the field. I really don't. I think Michigan are going to put a lot of points down on them. I think there's going to be some really, really sad Ohio State fans when this is done. So, yeah, Michigan win pretty easy for me on that one. What is the spread? I just had it there a minute ago. So it is over-under is 57.5. What do you reckon? That getting reached?
What number is it, sorry?
57.5, the over-under. You're taking the over or the under?
That's about
on the money, isn't it?
You're the gambling man, Matt. You're the gambling man.
True.
I'll take the under.
Ooh, I'm going to take the over. Not by much. I'm going to take the over. Right, we'll get through the last few of these because I'm well aware we have a second podcast to do this evening. Quick thoughts. Notre Dame at USC. USC need to win this one to keep up the college football playoff hopes. They need to win this one to wrap up home advantage in the Pac-12 championship game. A lot on this for them. But Notre Dame, who the hell knows what they are this year? Home defeats to Stanford and Marshall have just been like, yeah, that's an awful team. But they've won a lot of games this season. And slowly, more progressively, under Marcus Freeman, they're looking like a very competent football team. And this is a big banana skin for USC. Cannot write them off on this one. Thoughts, Notre Dame, USC?
I think ND can do it. They've just recently beat Clemson, who were a juggernaut beforehand, and they absolutely tore them apart. I know ND have had, obviously, the really bad losses, which does annoy me a bit because they're still ahead of us in the college playoff rankings despite this, but I can just see them doing it. They both have decent offense. Well, USC has a great offense. ND has a great defense. And vice versa, USC's defense is okay. I just trust ND's running game a tiny bit more, and obviously right. Michael Mayer as well. I can see him almost dinking and dunking, just running the ball, because that's what they did against Clemson. If I remember rightly, I know we broke the record for rushing yards in a game against Clemson this season, but then ND, I think, beat it as well.
Yeah, their run game's been really good recently. Interesting, Matt. I mean, USC 5.5-point favorites, over under is 64. They're expecting a lot to be scored. Who have you got?
Well, smash the over, by the way. 64 points. Smash the over. These defenses are trash. USC have not scored less than 41 points in their last five games. Notre Dame have not scored less than 35 points in their last five games. And those five games for Notre Dame include Clemson and Syracuse, two very good defenses. This game has got points written all over it. I'm going with USC, better quarterback, better top receiving weapon. Jordan Addison is probably wide receiver one in this draft. I know people will like Quentin Johnson. Addison's been the lead runner for a long time, and he's done his draft stock no problems in this season. Notre Dame are facing a defense where they could do some real damage, though. I could see it going either way. I think that the spread is too wide. I think this will be a close game, but I think USC just sneak it. And if Caleb Williams delivers a win, it Heisman. Might be enough to do it for the Heisman.
I think USC are going to win this, but a little bit more comfortably. But I could be wrong. I just don't know if Notre Dame have it in them at this moment in time. But I could very easily see, you know, a Lincoln Riley defense. I mean, USC are basically Oklahoma this year. Score a lot of points, give up a lot of points. It's amazing the similarity between these two teams. So if Notre Dame bring it and the run game's good, they score a lot of points on them. I'm just not convinced they can. Right, let's get through these last few. Oregon Derby. Don't know what we call it over here. But yeah, the Oregon rivalry. Oregon are at Oregon State. But don't just write Oregon State off on this one yet. Oregon 9-2 on the season, but the Oregon State Beavers are 8-3, having a tremendous season themselves, gone completely under the radar for this one. Now, Oregon, only 3.5-point favorites for this one. No, they are the road team, so it kind of suggests there's a bit of a bigger gap between them. Over under set at 56.5, so they don't think it's going to be the highest scoring game in the world. But Oregon State are a team who I've secretly admired a lot this year, the way they've gone about the game, the way they've played. They've had some good wins this year. The losses, I mean, USC, Utah, and who's the other one? Washington. So they're not exactly losing to bad football teams this year. They've beaten some good sides. Beat Arizona State 31-7 the week just gone. Say, only a 3-point loss to USC. You know, so I'm not sure this one is as cut and dry as it's meant to be. I think this is a real upset alert game, especially with it being rivalry. But Oregon need this. Oregon need this one badly. Bo Nix needs this one badly. Pac-12, where are we going?
I hate to say it, because I also do like Oregon State. I liked them last year as well. But I can see Oregon doing it for one thing. It's because I've seen some rumblings through the knolls that the Oregon OC, Kelly Dinningham, who used to be our OC last year, which is why I know a bit about him, supposedly he's also getting contact for head coaching jobs. So I could almost see him going down deep into that bag of tricks that he has and just doing some things that Oregon State haven't seen on tape and just get that being that slight edge that they need to win the game. I think it could be closer than some people think between the two teams, but I can see Oregon just about edging it.
Yeah, it really all hinges on Bo Nix. You know, if he's going to go. He's clearly going to go because he went last week, but it's a right foot injury, and I got that wrong. If that right foot is still giving him trouble and he can't rush, this Oregon State defense ain't to be trifled with. You know, they're going to give him a lot of problems. If Bo Nix can be mobile, I think that gives them enough to win the game, Oregon. But if he doesn't, I'm going to go the other way. As it stands, I'm going Oregon, but it will be a game time decision for me, and I might flip depending on any injury news I hear from him.
It is a big indicator of that game. I mean, Oregon's bad losses come on the road. They're pretty infallible at home. So if this was the other way around, I'd be on there. But I think Oregon State going to cause the upset. I don't know. I just like them. They're going to be at home. It's going to be a raucous atmosphere. It's going to be noisy. Bo Nix is going to be really up against it. And I think this Oregon State team are pretty good. So I'm going to go with them. Two left. Another interstate rivalry. Washington at Washington State. Washington favored by 2.5, over under 58.5. I'm instantly going Washington State just because I'm a big fan of the quarterback. He's at home. I think he'd be able to cap off a very nice season here with a rivalry win. So, yeah, that's my Washington State. Gents, what have you got?
I'm taking Washington State. Penix has had one of the best seasons a quarterback has had this year in college football. He has elevated himself from afterthought, disappointment, to someone who really has put himself in the draft picture. You know, Penix is going to get drafted, and he's going to make a team quite happy, I think. He operates an offense very well, but I love Cam Ward, and, you know, this is probably heart over head. The head should pick Washington, but my heart says Washington State.
You know what, to be honest, I'm going to say the same. I know I've put down Washington as like the instant reaction when the picks came out, but I actually might flip to Washington State. Looking at the matchup, yeah, I could just see it. I know Washington are ranked and Washington State aren't. Washington have got two more wins and all this. But yeah, it could be the difference between which quarterback can do more. And yeah, I just trust Cam Ward to be more consistent and to put it on the line than I do Penix.
There we go. Washington State sweep. Last one, Sun Belt action. Coastal Carolina at James Madison. Coastal already wrapped up their position in the championship game, playing against a very plucky James Madison side who only just came up from the FCS this season. Were one of the, I think, last 10 unbeaten teams in the country, but it did sort of reach ahead. They had a few losses, successive ones against Georgia Southern, Marshall, and Louisville. They bounced back with wins over Old Dominion, who've had some terrific wins this year, but been a bad football team, and Georgia State. Coastal Cal favored by 13.5, but this is on James Madison's patch, and I have learned this season, Do not underestimate them. Jed's finishing the pick watch. Some belt predictions, please.
It comes down to the quarterback. You go. I was going to say, it comes down to the quarterback again, in a way. I just trust McCall more. He was having getting draft hype last year. He was doing really well. And again, he's done pretty decent this year. And I think if I look, Coastal are unbeaten on the road, while JMU at home, they have the one loss. I could just see McCall just being that little edge that maybe he might be even, but he just has that little bit more. And this could actually, if I could see this being that sort of this statement game for him, he could come out and think, right, this is my like last chance now to put it onto the field and show teams why they should take me above day three.
Yeah, so the JMU, according to ESPN, have a chance of winning this game of 63%, which I know flies in the face of what Ant just said about the spread. So there are wildly different predictions for this game. But I'm with Ash. I think that McCall is the best quarterback, the more reliable quarterback. 21 touchdowns, one interception on the year. And you know what? Coastal are going to go. They're going to finish off the year with a high.
Oh, I got it wrong. James Madison are 14.5 point favourites.
There we go.
Wow, that'll be why. That seems high.
Actually, is Grayson McCall playing? I think I might have missed something here, and I think McCall might be out, and it's just come to me, but I don't know why.
Yeah, oh yeah, his foot injury.
Yeah. That's why.
Oh.
But Coastal have had a real good ground game this year.
Yeah. So. I've flipped to JMU. I've just remembered that. And JMU have had a good defense. Good defense against a backup quarterback. Go JMU.
Oh, see, I don't know. I've bet against Coastal when I shouldn't have this year. I'm not 100% sure about this. But they've still been winning without him. That's the point. I'm going to go Coastal. I think they can still do it without him. I think they are a really good team this year. We wondered how they'd get on, but I mean, they didn't play this weekend because it was the Virginia game, unfortunately, what happened there. But they've beaten App State and Southern Miss without him. So I'm gonna say that he can do it. And that's that. Any other fixtures anyone is interested in or wants to mention this weekend before we call this a day? Obviously, South Carolina head to Clemson. Possible upset alert there. Tennessee and Vanderbilt face off. Maybe Vanderbilt will get 3 weeks in a row at the top of the charts, top of the title list here. Any other games anyone wants to mention before we get out of here? No, we're all good? Right. So thank you ever so much for everyone who has joined us this evening for a much different panelled college football podcast. We appreciate you joining us as always. And Ryan will be back from his American travels next week. And we will be back with you hopefully a week from today on the Wednesday, where we will be discussing the end of the college football season, regular season week 13, and we will be previewing the championship games, which will be coming up very shortly after that. And then probably in a couple of weeks, we will do our final end of season mock drafts, which is always going to be good fun. How much of mine and Ryan's opinions changed over the course of the last half a season. But to Matthew, to Ash, thank you ever so much for stepping in this evening while Ryan's been away and I am ill as all hell. I may not look it, but this has been a bit of a grind to get through. So thank you very much. In terms of the Roar of the Lions UK main podcast, we will be back with you shortly. We will be looking at Buffalo Bills preview because that is happening tomorrow. It is all over the place, our schedule this week. We will be doing a watch-along tomorrow, as we usually do. I will definitely be on. Matt might be on a little bit later. I don't know what's happening with work or not, but we'll both be on at some stage or another. So you can come along and watch our live reactions to the game. Hopefully we kick their ass there. Apart from that, just go through all our socials very quickly because we're going to do this twice this evening. Website www.roarofthelionsuk.com. Please go and check out Ashley's article on the Buffalo Bills tomorrow after you've listened to our podcast later as well. Two great sources of information on this game on YouTube, Roar of the Lions UK, Twitch, ROTL_UK, Facebook page, Roar of the Lions UK, group, Detroit Lions fans, UK One Pride Worldwide, on Twitter, ROTL_UK, Instagram, same. And yeah, thank you ever so much to everyone who has joined us this evening. Just, I guess, as I say, remains for me to once again thank Matthew. Thank you. Thank you once again, Ashley. Really appreciate you joining me this week. And we shall see you shortly. One Pride.
One Pride. One Pride.